glad to have the presence of everyone here tonight. Our topic tonight is one of which I've been thinking about for a while and working with students that I've had in Bible classes, my own children, and some others. And it relates to the topics of some of the songs that Larry led this night. Our friendships. Our friendships can evolve on many levels. We have friendships, obviously, with God, with one another, with acquaintances, and all of those have different levels and different nuances associated with them. Our relationship to God is one of which is based in deep love and trust in what He said He's going to do for us. Our friendships with one another would hopefully be built on those same premises, but always don't make it to that level. And those are some of the topics that we're going to look at tonight. There are key elements in friendship, the Bible way, that we want to point out. Friendship is a kind of relationship that's got to be grounded in a special concern. A special concern that one has for another person. I mean, we have that relationship with our spouses. That deep, abiding relationship where we care for them, we care for their well-being, we care for their physical well-being, their spiritual well-being. If we've got acquaintances that we meet every day at work, but we have no other association with other than saying hello to them in the hallway, it's very difficult to build this same type of deep and special concern. Friendships require an interaction between both parties to exist. You can't have a friendship with just one person. It takes two, it takes multiple people to have a real relationship or a friendship to occur. And it can't be a one-sided thing either. Friendships differ in that way from love relationships. I can love someone and care about them and not have a friendship with them if they don't care a thing about me. So a friendship is different from a love relationship in that aspect. Without both parties participating, you can't have a friendship, and you can't build on something that will last much longer. And that's what it boils down to from the standpoint of friendships in the broad sense. It's something that's between two people. It's something that has to be built upon, and it has to be acted upon by both parties. And it has to be an abiding concern of some sort between those parties. The Bible has and notes a number of friendships. We have the friendship, of course, in relationship with God, with Christ, as our mediator to God. We have Him, a relationship with Him with respect to being a master. There's relationships associated with individuals being servants. Now, those aren't exclusive of being friendships as well. You could have a servant and a master, and the two of them be friends. You could have a co-worker and an employee and an employer that are both friends because they have a deep abiding concern in both being employed for the rest of their lives. And because of that mutual concern, they work together in like mind to make sure that it happens. In the Bible, we have examples, and tonight I'm not really talking about those types of relationships where we have differing levels. I want to look more at parallel relationships where it's two people that are more or less peers and how we would do that. And that's important particularly to young people as you're developing your friendships. Who you choose as friends, how you develop those friendships, and how you discard those friendships and what that discard might have as an impact upon the lives of others in the future. Some of the biblical examples of friendships, of course, are associated with Job and his friends. This is a good example of peer friendships. We know the story of Job, how he was afflicted as a result of God allowing Satan to strip him of his physical wealth, to afflict his body, and then how his friends came and then, at first, empathized with him and sympathized with his plight. They came and were silent and remained silent. They stripped their clothes off of them. They mourned with him as Job was mourning. And yet later, in the passages associated with how his friends behaved, they began to chastise him and turn on him in a way that Job recognized as an utter betrayal of his friendship with those people. They had lost sight of the original relationship that had been built over many years of mutual trust. And assuming that he had deviated from his natural lifestyle and taken on something that caused this affliction to come upon him. That's an example of a peer-to-peer relationship of friends and how it should be and then how it can deteriorate. Amnon and Jonadab, relatives as well as peers, young men. Amnon and his sin associated with Tamar was influenced as a result of Jonadab. In 2 Samuel 13, 2-5, we see Jonadab counseling Amnon. Amnon had said his soul was vexed as a result of his feelings for his sister Tamar. What did Jonadab advise him to do? He advised him to do evil. Just as young people, you can be influenced by your peer friends to be influenced to do evil. The Bible makes a specific point here regarding Jonadab that he was Amnon's friend. It doesn't make any distinction there about him as being a counselor, an advisor, but he was his friend advising him on what he could do to get his way. Probably the best known friendship, and the one that I want to spend the most time associated with and draw points from tonight, is the association between David and Jonathan. The relationship between David and Jonathan is so poignant, so fervent between the two of them, it is key to understanding how a friendship can develop and how it can be maintained and how it can be preserved and what elements associated with that friendship are so key to having it survive. But to study that relationship, we need to go back and set some of the framework. So if you would be turning with me to 1 Samuel 18 through 20. We know at this time it comes about the relationship and interaction between David and Jonathan is shortly after and as a result of Saul's sin with and allowing King Agag to live and being punished as a result of that. David having already been anointed as potentially to be future king, and we see that unfolding now as this young man, David, encounters the house of Saul. The evil spirit has come upon Saul as a result of God allowing him to be vexed because of his sin. We see him asking for someone to come into his presence and to soothe him. And as a result of that, they send throughout the kingdom and find someone who can play music in a way that could soothe Saul's heart. We can assume, to some degree, that this is the first introduction of Jonathan and David together. We don't know Jonathan's age. He may have been considerably older than David. We don't know the details of how the relationship actually started, other than when we get to chapter 18 and find the key elements of it beginning. But the roots of it start here as David comes into Saul's household and plays for him to soothe him. We see a relationship starting to build there, even with Saul, in that Saul respects David and appreciates what he does for him. But it's in the next chapters associated with that that we see a greater story unfold, and that's David slaying Goliath. We know the story of David slaying Goliath, but we want to jump from that and springboard into Jonathan's reaction at the beginning of chapter 18 and how he responded to David going and killing the Philistine Goliath. In chapter 18, verses 1 through 4, and this is after David has slain Goliath, and it came to pass when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his garments, even his sword, to his bow, and to his girdle. Now, there's elements associated with that we're going to point out later. Obviously, in doing this, Jonathan is recognizing David for what he has done with Goliath. He is showing his love and respect for David by giving him things. This was the prince. Giving him his robe, giving him his bow, his sword, and all of those things associated with it. Later on, we continue to see elements associated with David and Jonathan's relationship. We see that they become associated as a result of being brothers-in-law. David takes Michal to be his wife after Saul has promised him Merab, his eldest daughter, and then fails to do that. David goes and kills 200 Philistines and delivers the foreskins of the Philistines to Saul as a dowry for his Michal to become his wife. These are all things that join David and Jonathan in many ways. In a greater sense, they had a concern for not only one another, but a concern for the kingdom. They were fighting the Philistines jointly. They become associated from a brother-in-law standpoint and build relationships around that. We're not told the nature of the covenant that Jonathan and David embarked upon early in chapter 18. We learn later on, as we study it, the nature of that relationship. But it's repeated over and over again that they had a covenant between the two of them. As the evil spirit of Saul is taken over him, we know that Saul tries to kill David. He throws and tries to pin him to a wall with a javelin in one instance. As a result of that, David flees. He goes to his home with Michal. Michal lets him out of the window, and again he flees from the presence of Saul. David goes to Jonathan and appeals to him, saying, "Your father wants to kill me." Jonathan says, No, my father doesn't want to kill me." Now this is talking about a friendship, the friendship between a parent and a son here. Son having to reconcile something he doesn't want to hear necessarily about his own father. Jonathan's saying, "My father wouldn't do this without telling me." And yet David does appeal to him and say, "Go and talk to him. Surely it's true." Jonathan speaks to his father, talks to him about this evil thing that he wants to do. Saul reveals to him, "Yes, I do want to kill David. Your kingdom can't be established unless these things come to pass." Jonathan reasons with Saul on David's behalf. Key word there. Jonathan reasons with his own father on David's behalf. This is as a result of their friendship. It should have been also as a result of Jonathan's concern for his father's soul, in that he would have been committing evil for killing innocent blood as a result of trying to kill David. But we know particularly it was driven by the relationship of David and Jonathan. Jonathan prevails in this particular instance on his appeal to his father to keep from killing David. He relents, and David comes back into the household. We see that that lasts for a short period of time in chapter 19. And then again, Saul is overcome by his evil spirit and tries to kill David again. David flees. He flees down to the area surrounding Samuel. Saul sends his servants to try and take David, and they begin to prophesy as a result of that. Saul himself goes down to the area and tries to take David, and he prophesies. The Lord is on David's side at this point and thwarts the efforts of Saul. In chapter 20, as we migrate to some of the key elements associated with David and Jonathan's covenant, we see David again approaching Jonathan and saying, "Surely your father wants to kill me." Jonathan says, It's not true, but here's what we'll do." David says to Jonathan, "Okay, there's a feast to be here. It's the new moon feast. And associated with that, I'll be missed if I'm not in the presence of the king." At this point, David has taken over the position of the leadership of all the armies. He's found favor in the sight of all of the people going in and out before them. And because of that relationship, the people are praising him above everything. And no doubt that's driven Saul to his jealousy and his anger associated with David. David tells Jonathan, "I'm going to hide until the third day of the feast. And if your father doesn't seem to miss me, then I'll understand that things are well. But if your father's anger begins to be kindled against me, then I'm going to know that he seeks to kill me. And you'll need to relay to me that that's the case. They devise a plan on how to proceed with that and how to make sure that that was conveyed to David. While David was hidden in an area, they devised a plan that said that Jonathan would go into and shoot arrows. And if he told his servant or armor-bearer to go and retrieve the arrows and saying that they're closer in, it was okay for David then to come out of hiding. But if they were further away, it was a sign to David that he needed to flee. Well, no doubt Saul was angry on the third day. And he actually tried to pin his own son to the wall with a javelin. And that obviously convinced Jonathan at that point of his father's intentions. No doubt it would have been a sad day in Jonathan's life to know how his father was trying to kill his own friend. But yet, he showed the great loyalty that it took and the great faithfulness that it took to go against what his father wanted him to do and to do what was right. He went out into the field, he shot the arrows, he told his armor-bearer that they're well beyond, just leave them there and come on back. He waited until his armor-bearer left, and Jonathan and David came together and said farewell. But before saying farewell, they renewed their covenant. One of the things that David had revealed to Jonathan before, earlier about this, his concern about his father wanting him to kill him, he said, "I would rather it be you to kill me if I've done wrong than for your father to do it." Those are pretty strong words for you to ask for your friend to take your own life. But because of their relationship, he would have felt much more comfortable with that than he would have felt with it if it had been done some other way. We see them coming out and coming together after that at the end of chapter 20 and talking about the covenant that earlier in the passage that's been brought out. Jonathan says, "Take care of me and my family even after I am gone." David agrees to this. And then we see later in 2 Samuel, after Saul's household is decimated, that he takes in Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth, who is the son of Jonathan, a lame son of Jonathan, sits at his table and is nourished at the king's table from then on. David fulfills his covenant to his lost friend. We see at the beginning of 2 Samuel, after the death of Jonathan and Saul in the battle with the Philistines, Verse 11 of chapter 1 of 2 Samuel, "Then David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with them." And this is at the news of hearing that Saul and Jonathan had been slain. "They mourned and wept and fasted until evening." Later on we see that the men of Jabesh-Gilead were the ones that were responsible for having gone and taken down the bones of Saul and Jonathan, having buried them. We see David taking the special note to thank the men of Jabesh-Gilead for what they had done on behalf of Saul and Jonathan. Okay. The story of David and Jonathan is very tight together. The love that they had for one another was built upon a number of things, and it's key for us to look at those items. What is required for a friendship? One of the first elements for a friendship is mutual caring. You've got to have something that you care about together. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born in adversity. You're not fair weather friends. In John 21, 15 through 19, Jesus questioned Peter over and over, "Do you love me?" His first two responses were love in the sense of, "You're my friend." And later on, the third response, a greater love being expressed, that of a deep, abiding love, an agape love. Respect and honor. In 1 Samuel 18:4, we see the respect and honor that Jonathan held for David. He had already distinguished himself as a great warrior in his faith for God as a result of killing Goliath. We don't know the age of David when he went against Goliath. But no doubt he was considered to be a lad. He showed great faith in God to be able to go against Goliath. Jonathan, in giving him his sword, his girdle, and everything, elevated him to the level of being a prince, effectively, because he had given him the garments of a prince. What is required in a friendship? Intimacy. Now, this is different from the type of intimacy that we're talking about between husbands and wives. We're specifically talking about here, it's not just the sharing of private information or even the very personal information. It's more that contributes to the bonds of trust and intimacy between companion friends. It's sharing what friends care about that is relevant. You can tell I got that from somebody else. It involves caring about each other's good for the other's sake and not acting on the behalf of the other, and acting on the behalf of the other's good. It means entertaining a sustained relationship with someone and trusting your friend's goodwill that they too trust in you. Okay? There's a third element to what's required in a friendship: shared activity. And this relates back to one of the earlier points we made. You can't have a friend if there's not two involved. You've got to have something in common with that person that you do and engage in with that person in order to get to know them to some degree. What brings you together? What draws you together? Obviously, husbands and wives are drawn together because of their marriage relationship. And hopefully, they were drawn together before that because of their friendship. Because it's a good place to start building the marriage relationship. Friends engage in joint pursuits. I know there are a number of people here in this congregation that engage in joint pursuits of music. There are a number of men in this congregation that engage in joint pursuits of playing golf together and communicating on the golf course with one another and spending time to enjoying each other's company in that way. Those are like pursuits. A number of the young people have engaged in Sunday night Bible studies in which they've been able to come together and to get to know each other and spend time studying God's Word. Again, that is another like-minded joint pursuit. There's no doubt that Jonathan and David jointly wanted to destroy the Philistines because of all the woes that they had inflicted upon the children of Israel and continued to do so. They fought together to defeat the Philistines. We know of Jonathan's attempts or battles with the Philistines and what he was capable of doing, as documented earlier in 1 Samuel. We know over and over again what David was able to do as a result of God giving him the ability to do so. And we know through their covenant relationship with each other that they planned to care for each other's families. What's required to make up or for a friendship? Well, we pointed out in 1 Samuel 18 and 4, the other things we've just described, the three things, those are elements that are key to having a friendship. Well, these are things that make up that friendship. What fosters it? What's able to make it grow? Respect and honor. You can't be friends with somebody that you don't respect, because you won't want to spend time with them. You won't want to put your trust in them. And you won't want to spend time honoring them. Love. Proverbs 17:17 is a key passage associated with this. In Proverbs 17:17, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born of adversity. We mentioned that earlier. Faithfulness or fidelity. In 1 Samuel 20, we see the faithfulness of Jonathan in going against the wishes of his father and informing David that, yes, his father was out to kill him, and actually making way and provisions for him to go and escape. Helpful. Ecclesiastes 4:9-10. Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 10, two are better than one because they have good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will help his fellow. Other translations use friend in that passage. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Friends are helpful to one another. I know that there are those among the congregation when there's someone that's sick, they'll sit with them. I know there are those in the congregation when someone's sick, they'll bring food to them. Or if they've got a handyman project and they need an extra body to help give them a hand with, that person will volunteer and help give them a hand with it, or loan them their tools to do it. Those are the things that are parts of friendships. Sympathy. In Job 2, 11 through 13, his friends initially showed the sympathy that was characteristic of a friendship between them. They sat, they mourned together in ash and sackcloth. Commitment. In 1 Samuel 20 and 16, we see the commitment that Jonathan showed to David. Now, Jonathan was just a fair-weather friend, and he knew that this was going to cause strife between him and his father, which no doubt it did. He wouldn't have been committed to helping David escape. There's no way that he would have spent the effort or whatever. He was the prince. This is this young man that was probably going to usurp his throne. If you boiled it down to that, if Jonathan actually read the tea leaves of what was going on, that was going to take place. His father understood that. He even told him so. Reciprocity. Big word. Okay? Proverbs 18:24. If you want a friend, show yourself friendly. It takes a friend to be a friend. And that's required for a friendship. If you expect a friendship to be always one-sided, where one party is giving, the other party is always taking, that friendship won't last. You can't have one that effectively dominates a friendship and acts as a bully in the friendship, trying to get their way out of the other person. Young people, if you find yourself in a relationship like that, it's not a friendship. And the best thing you can do at that point is, if it's a fellow Christian, tell them what you're doing is wrong. Advise them on it. If they won't listen to you, you need to find other friends. An admonition regarding friends. We've talked about elements that are essential to having a friendship. You should think about admonitions regarding friends. The Bible has numerous examples of throughout the Proverbs about our friends and who we should associate it with. Proverbs 21 and 10, the soul of the wicked desires evil. His neighbor finds no favor in his eyes. Make no friendship with an angry man. With a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. Sounds a lot like evil companionships corrupt good morals. Proverbs 25 and 19. Confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth or a foot out of joint. Part of friendship is trust. It's expecting that person that is your friend to be there when you truly do need them. This passage points to that. If you know that someone's not trustworthy, they're not going to be a good friend. They're not going to be someone you can rely on. And they're not going to be someone that will be able to build you up and comfort you. Proverbs 6, 1 and 3. My son, if thou be surety for thy friend, thou art snared with the words of your mouth. This is talking about entering into business or loaning someone money or whatever. The Bible principle behind that is that you've snared yourself. If you want something to come between two friends, money's one of the quickest ways to come between friends. Now, if everybody behaved the way they should, it probably wouldn't. But far too often, something will happen. I got some good advice a long time ago. If you were going to loan somebody something, don't expect to get it back. And if you don't get it back, don't get your feelings hurt. Verse 3, it says, do this now, my son, and deliver thyself, humble thyself, and make sure thy friend. If you've entered into that agreement, you need to make sure of that friend and be prepared for what may come. Practical applications. A fair-weather friend is no friend at all. What happened to the friends of the prodigal son when he was hungry? Did they offer to feed him? The people that he had been spending in riotous living with and living up his lifestyle with? Who did he have to go to for his meals? He had to go to work in the swine, feeding the swine. One of the other notes that I had written down but did not make into my slide presentation relates to that particular passage. What happens when you write down things in your notes and don't write them down in the presentation? Proverbs 19:6. Proverbs 19:6. Many will entreat the favor of the prince, and every man is a friend to him that giveth gifts. That's the title of a fair weather friend. If you're buying your way and buying your way into your friendships, it'll go away when the gifts quit flowing. Friendships take time and will wither like a flower in shallow ground unless nurtured. It's the best analogy I could come up with. If friendships aren't deeply rooted, and they aren't nurtured regularly, I have friends from high school I haven't seen in 20 years. I don't know their lifestyles now. I don't know whether they're faithful. And I certainly don't have a relationship with them where I can go up to them and admonish them the same way that I could have 28 years ago now. Because I didn't spend the time nurturing those relationships and maintaining them over time. Now, it's almost impossible to do that in many ways. People move away. You meet more and more people. You're involved with people day to day and you get involved in those relationships. But it is one of the things when I think back as we talk about some of the potential regrets, that fosters one of those in not being able to maintain some level of contact and influence with those people over time. Friends encourage one another and build each other up. If your friends aren't encouraging you, if they aren't building you up day in and day out, they're not your friend. If they don't encourage you spiritually, or if they try to entice you to do something else that's wrong, they're not your friend. You need to find other friends. I know a lot of this is being targeted at young people. Parents, you got to pay attention too. I got to pay attention on my own children. But we all have to pay attention and encourage them and reinforce these same ideas so that they get the message. Friends defend each other in the presence of others. Somebody's talking bad about your friend, you need to ask them to quit. Put it down. Say it's not appropriate to do that. And if they're saying something that is bad about your friend that supposedly they've done, that is bad, you owe your friend the obligation of going and talking to them and trying to get it corrected. You may be the last one to learn. You may be blinded to events that your friends are actually involved in. But when you do learn about them, you've got to take action on that. Because there's one more thing that's more important than a friendship here. It's that person's soul. Friends feel the deepest betrayal when trust is broken. Obviously, the ultimate level of this would be a husband and wife and the unfaithfulness of one spouse. That trust is broken, and that's an ultimate betrayal. That's so difficult to try and rebuild and overcome. It is possible, but it has to go back and take root in that original friendship and rebuild it. If your friends tell you they're going to do something for you and they don't do it, that's one level. But if they betray you in front of someone else, it's even harder. Potential regrets. I alluded to this earlier. Friendships come with potential regrets, or the potential for us regretting something in the future. The phrase, nothing ventured, nothing gained, holds particularly true with friends. You know, it takes effort to maintain a friendship. If you're not willing, or if one isn't willing or able to commit the emotional energy that it takes to maintain a friendship, it won't last and it won't be a satisfying experience. I see people in this congregation that I went to school with and that I've grown up my entire life with, and that makes a fantastic relationship. Now, I may not reveal to them my most intimate secrets, but yet I have that level of trust with them because I know their character. I knew them when they were young. I knew them when they 10 years later, now 20 years later, and they've been consistent. So what if I didn't tell them my hands were ice cold before I got up here? If you felt the temperature in the building drop 5 degrees, it's probably because my hands sucked it out. But it doesn't take sharing intimate details to build an intense friendship. It takes trust, respect, longevity, empathy, sympathy, all of those types of things. What could my influence have been on the person that is no longer in a direct friendship? Or that I've... Maybe it's a passing acquaintance or passing friendship. Maybe it was a very intense friendship that no longer exists. How did I influence that person at that time? Did I leave them with a good influence that would help them stay faithful? Or did I leave them with an influence that failed at some point and allowed them to potentially be influenced in a manner that would cause them to go astray? I look back on my friendships with different people and I can see weaknesses in areas where I had intense friendships at the time, but yet on parting, those friendships weren't in the best of shape. Potentially could have had a negative impact on that person. Have I influenced this person for evil by setting a bad example? You know, young people, you're at a point where some of you are dating. Some of you will be dating. You'll have an opportunity to get involved in situations that you'll be tempted to do things you shouldn't do. And that person that's your best friend at that point that you may be dating, depending on whether they're a Christian or not, may be influenced in a way by your actions that lead them astray, not necessarily in your relationship, but in relationships that follow. Be careful of that. Conclusion. God made us in His own image with an eternal soul that's capable of love and relationships. God exhibited this throughout the Bible in the relationships that He maintained and ultimately in the love shown by Him sending His Son so that we might have eternal life with Him. God expects us to develop relationships and influence others for good. If we don't do that, we can't teach. We can't influence other people. You know, it's very hard to teach somebody the truth if you don't have some type of relationship with them. They have no reason to trust you. They have no reason to believe that you're going to be there when they have a need. As a result, we must. We must develop relationships. By doing the opposite, we become a friend of the world and an enemy of God, as quoted in James 4:4. This lesson has mostly been associated with the ideas of friendship and the concepts of friendship and what it means to be a friend. I look out over this congregation and I see friends. I see people that have friendships within their own groups, people of their own age groups that they're very closely associated with, and I see friendships that extend above and beyond. We show examples of friendship with people when we involve them in our wedding ceremonies. We have them as our bridesmaids or our groomsmen and so on, as a sign of respect and honor for those relationships. I know that some of you have served as each of those positions in those relationships. I see friendships in here where people have come to each other over time when someone's faltering spiritually and has come to them and encouraged them. It takes trust, it takes respect and honor, it takes time, and it takes love. And it's something we all have to commit to. If we all commit to that, any individual that's here tonight that's not a Christian will eventually become a Christian because they're going to want to be part of that friendship. they're going to want to have a friendship with not only God, but with those other people that seek to serve God. If you're not in this assembly now tonight, a Christian, we encourage you to consider your status with God at this time. You're not in a friendship relationship with Him. He's there as your master, but you haven't developed that bond with Him that will save you eternally. You have that opportunity now as we stand and sing.